Good evening. Funny way to start the daf. Today's about daf Mesas Chav Zion. We are starting on Chavav Amud Beis, and we're starting with the words Tashma coming here. So that is about a dozen lines from the bottom of the Amud. So you know that when we're starting with Tashma, so that means that we're in the middle of a discussion. So what are we discussing? So I'll just take a little bit of a larger picture macro. We're in the third parak here of the Masechta Beitzah. And so here it's a little bit disjointed in terms of the topics that are being covered. We opened up the parak by talking about you're not allowed to trap on Yontif, even though it's Ochel Nefesh, and you would think that you can trap because how else are you going to get the food, but you can't trap on Yontif. All the trapping has to be done before Yontif. We attempted at the beginning of the parak to give explanations in terms of why. When I say we, the Rishonim already are bothered. Why can I do some malachas for Ochel Nefesh? Why can I not do other malachas for Ochel Nefesh? It's a really big topic. It happens to be an important topic. The Mishnayos just gives us the do's and don'ts. The Mishnayos never give us a uniform explanation of why this and why not that. And so what the Rishonim try to do is they try to create systems in terms of why this and why not. And can we formulate that in terms of a system? Some sort of systematic approach. Good. That was the beginning of the third parak. Then a couple of Mishnayos talked about Hefsed Mamon. Things that you have to do in order to ensure that you don't lose a lot of money. So let's say, for example, your animal is dying and it's Yontif is now ebbing away, and you're not allowed to shech the animal from Yontif to Chol. That's an issur daraisa. But at the same time, however, if I don't shech the animal now, it's going to die. The animal's not a trefa. It's just a misukenis. It's just on its way out. It's old age. So I want to shech it now because if I don't shech it now, it's going to then die without a shechita. I'm going to lose all that meat. So am I allowed to shech it? The answer is yes. You're allowed to shech it, but provided. Provided that you can eat a kazayas of the meat roasted before the end of Yontif. Do you actually have to do so? Presumably not, predicated on the principle of Hovel. Then we did another Mishnah, which is yesterday's daf. That's funny. That we did this morning. And then there was another Mishnah, and the Mishnah went on to discuss the Bechor. Bechor falls into a pit. So over here now, we're looking at about a significant loss of money as well. So as we already discussed this morning in the on Chavav, so the halacha by Bechor is that the firstborn animal that is born amongst your domesticated animals have kedusha. Kedusha so me rechem. Kedusha occurs the moment it's just born. This is the kind of kedusha where you don't have to do anything, and you can't change it. By the way, in other words, it's kadosh me'elav. And so what do you do? It's part of the manas kahuna, one of the 24 gifts that goes to the kohanim. The kohen is a recipient of it, and without a base of mikdash. Now, he just simply has to wait until it develops a blemish. Prior to it developing a blemish, he has to offer it on the Mizbech, but we don't have a Mizbech, so wait. And he's got to wait until the blemish develops. We're going to be speaking a little bit later on this evening about the idea that the Kohan, because they're so motivated to have the animal get a blemish, so if they present the animal with a blemish, so we're a little bit suspect in terms of how the blemish got there. There is, whatever, we're suspicious that the Kohan put the blemish there themselves. Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about that later this evening. But anyway, so the Bechor falls into a pit, and now, can we shecht it? Well, we have to know if there's a mum. Can I lower a mumcha, an expert, into the pit in order for him to be able to see and paskin on the Bechor in order to establish and determine whether or not it's a Bechor ba'mum or it's not a Bechor ba'mum? So can we do so? It's machlokas in the Mishnah that we saw on Chavav. Machlok is between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is Mekel, and we pointed out, it's a little bit strange, in other words, it's what we did not expect, but Rabbi Yehuda is a Mekel on this issue, and Rabbi Shimon is a Machmir. Later in today's daf, we're going to talk about who the halacha follows, whether we hold like Rabbi Yehuda, whether we hold like Rabbi Shimon. Good, that's all a really brief summary, 4 minutes, of everything we discussed since the beginning of the parak. Now, the Gemara went off on a little bit of a tangent. We're going to finish off this tangent right now, and that is Muksa for half Shabbos. This is a Muksa for half Shabbos. It's a funny question, and let me reset the question. I know I just did it this morning, but good. Let's reset the question again. Is there Muksa for Chatzis Shabbos? The question goes like this. If something's Muksa during Ben Hashmashos, so the halacha is that Ke'ev Migu is Katzai Ben Hashmashos is Katzai Kula Yomai. Ben Hashmashos sets up a status for the entirety and the remainder of Shabbos. If something has the status of muksa for Ben Hashmashos, it will be muksa for the duration and the balance of Shabbos, period. And that's not just true for Shabbos, it's true for Yontif as well. Okay, so Ben Hashmashos sets the stage for what its status is going to be for the remainder of Shabbos. However, the Gemara wants to know the following. Let's say an item going into Shabbos is not muksa. Then after Ben Hashmashos, sometime during Shabbos, it becomes muksa. We'll clarify how could that be. And then it loses its muksa status. Now, if it were muksa during Bein HaShemashos, so regardless of what happens to the item and what kind of changes occur in the item, it's going to be muksa for the remainder of Shabbos or the remainder of Yom Tov. But over here, the nuanced question over here is that it wasn't muksa during Bein HaShemashos. It became muksa on Shabbos. It became unmuksad on Shabbos. What would be the situation under those circumstances? Henny, I got good seats next to me. Okay. So that was the question, and what did we try to do? So at the end of this morning, so what we tried to do is we tried to answer the question. We had two different versions. One version is yes, the other version is no. But when all said and done, we are struggling to come up with an answer to this question. So Tashma, that brings us now to where we are right at this point in the Gemara. So come in here. So we are on Chav Vav Amud Beis, and we are about a dozen lines from the bottom of the Amud. The first one line is Diyasei Dayanei Hasam. So the Gemara starts off, Haya Ochel Me'anavim Vehosir. So you're eating grapes, left some over. Now, Ve'halon Legag La'asos Be'em Tzimukim. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, so you know what I would love? I would love to bring the grapes up to my roof and have them bake in the sun and have them turn into raisins, drying out the grapes. So, B'teinim Vehosir Ve'halon Legag La'asos Be'em Grogros. Or you're eating figs, and what you now would like to do is you would like to dry them up on the roof. Same basic idea. So, Lo Yochamem Ashiyazmin Mibo Yom. So, on Shabbos now. Now, this is a primary example of muksa, in that you're taking an item, and basically what you're doing is you're saying, I am moving the item out of usage temporarily, because right now I want the item to, in this particular case, the grapes to turn into a raisin. Okay. This is a classic example of muksa. So what the Brisa tells us...
Why is the grape muksa?
Huh?
Why is the grape...
When I put it on the roof, in order so that it dries, so that is the example, that's the principal example of being mikatsa bedas, meaning I am actively saying that right now I don't want it anymore as a grape. The next time I want it is only as a raisin.
Even if you don't want it, why does it have to be...
That's a definition. I hear you, but that's... It's a definition of muksa.
Is it because you have no use for it?
No, it's because of your das, because of your intention. In other words,
you're writing it off.
Exactly. It's not just an intention, by the way. It's an action that it's coupled with an intention, meaning you're putting it on the roof.
Correct. A raisin itself is a play about that.
Anything that's edible is not muksa.
Okay, what you're saying is right. But in other words, but now you have to add a little more context. Meaning, and so now what we're learning together is that when you're taking the grape and you're putting it on the roof in order so that it becomes a raisin, so now that is you're writing it off. And once you write it off, so now it's muksa until it's a raisin. Okay, good. So so Achi Azmi Mibo Yom. Now, it says in the Braisa that if you do Hazman Mibo Yom, meaning going into Shabbos, you're thinking to yourself, I know I put those grapes on the roof in order so they dry and become raisins. I know I did that. But now, Hazmana, I want those grapes. So if you're Mazmin, you're good. And when, of course, implied in that, if you're not Mazmin, so then they're Muksa. Now, V'chena Tamotze Bafarsikin V'chavushin V'shar Komine Peros. And it's not just true by grapes, raisins. It's true by any kind of fruit that's dryable. Okay, I made up that word. So, anyways,
the hazmana. I'm sorry, just explain that again. You don't. When are you mazmin them?
So you mazmin them before Shabbos. In other words, you already put them up there on the roof
before Shabbos.
And now, as Shabbos is approaching, this is right before Bein HaShemashos. So you make a declaration and say, "I know I made them muksa. I rendered them muksa." But now what I'd like to do is I'd like to eat them. So that's the hazmana. The hazmana is basically to take them out of the muksa status. And if you did that, so you're good.
Even though you know what the raisins or grapes at this point.
Oh, okay. So, good. So, hey, chidami. So the Gemara says, now over here, we do need a little bit more context over here so that we properly understand the braisa. Eat the chazo, lamale hazmana. And the Gemara says, now, if at this point in time, they are, in fact, they're chazi. In other words, they're edible at this point in time. So then why do I need hazmana? And idalo chazi ki hazmin elohu mayhavi. Now, the Gemara's assumption is that there comes a point in time in the transition between grapes and raisins that they are not just, I didn't just write them off, but they actually are inedible. Okay. I've never dried a grape. Okay, so I don't know. But I'm just telling you the Gemara's assumption is that there's a transition period between grape and raisin. So every transition period is awkward, by the way. Adolescence, okay, right? It's a fact. So the transition period, the Gemara is assuming it's inedible. So the Gemara says, so if we're during the transition period, so then even if I do hazmana, it's not going to help me. So the Gemara says, "My havi v'chitem adelo yadi chazi lo chaze." So the Gemara says, "Okay, well, maybe I don't know." So the Gemara says, "Okay, I'll tell you. Let's clarify what happens in a case of I don't know." V'hamar of kahana muksa shiavish ve'ena balam akirin bo muter. Now let's say the muksa became yavish, meaning again, you put it on the roof to dry into raisins. Now going into Shabbos, you didn't know what happened. Somebody else knew what happened. In other words, somebody else checked on it, but you didn't know. So now what's the halacha on Shabbos morning? Where you go up to the roof, you discover that they're raisins, and, right, this is the way Rashi presents it, and somebody lets you know that they actually were raisins even going into Shabbos. What's the halacha? So the Gemara quotes very clearly. Moksa shiyavish ve'ena bala makirimbo, mutter. So the halacha is mutter. Okay, so now, Ella, lav. So the question now here is really simple. At what point in time do I need a hazmana, and when does that hazmana have any efficacy? It's a really simple question. We've basically covered every scenario, and either I don't need hazmana, or hazmana won't work. So the Gemara wants to know, what's exactly the scenario? So Ella lav dechazu v'itchu v'hadar ichzu. So the Gemara says, okay, so the case must be as follows. That going into Shabbos, they were mechzei. In other words, they were edible. And then at one point during Shabbos, they become inedible. And then on Shabbos again, they become edible again. Now, again, being that I have no experience whatsoever, is it possible that we're going to have A, going into Shabbos, an edible grape, then a transition period, and now an edible raisin all within one Shabbos? I don't know. It sounds like from the Gemara the answer is yes. Anyway, the point, however, is that presumably it's in this scenario that I need hazmana. And now it's going to speak to the question. Our question is there muksa for chatzi Shabbos? So assuming that we're right, and as you know, by the way, we've learned a lot of Gemara together. You know, anytime the Gemara makes an assumption, you know, you don't know if it's true. And what the Gemara is going to obviously push back on is the assumption. But at least right now we have an assumption that is, this is the case in question. It was edible going into Shabbos, becomes inedible sometime during Shabbos, returns back to becoming edible again on Shabbos. And the question now is that, can I enjoy it? So, So the Gemara says, now, if you say that there's no muksa, so then why do I need hazmana? In other words, what we're now suggesting is that there is a status of muksa, and that's why the hazmana is going to help you. So the Gemara says, elamai yesh muksa. So the Gemara says, okay, so let me go over what you're now saying. You're saying now that there is muksa. So the Gemara says, ki asman lahu mai havi. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. So if it actually became muksa, so what good is your hazmana? Your hazmana is, I plan on eating it. But if it's actually rendered inedible, so then good. I'm glad you said you're going to eat it, but it actually qualitatively became muksa. So what's the hazmana? So the Gemara says, lo tzricha da'achsav lo achso. So the Gemara says, well, here's what we're going to suggest. And that is, of course, we're going to change our assumption. The assumption is not that it's edible. The assumption is not that it's inedible. It's somewhere in between. Okay, if I may, right? If you're eating grapes, right? So sometimes you're going to find a questionable grape, right? On the cluster, right? Every grape looks great, and then there's one which is kind of like a little bit mushy. You know, starting to make its way to, you know, overripe. Now, would people eat it? Yesh v'yesh. Some do and some don't. Right? The brown banana. Right? That's a better example. Right? Yeah, everyone can relate to the brown banana. Are you going to eat a brown banana? Again, yesh v'yesh. Some people do, some people don't. So the Gemara says, that's what we're talking about here. Lo tzricha da'achsav lo achso. Di'ike nish da'achle v'ike nish lo achle. So azmin galidaite lo azmin lo galidaite. That's the discussion here that we're having. And that's why I need hazmana. So the hazmana that's necessary over here is for an extraordinarily limited case where the fruit is somewhat edible. Some do, some don't. The hazmana is just simply to declare where you are on this issue. Because if you're somebody who would eat it, so then it's not muksa. If you're somebody who's not going to eat it, so then it's not muksa. Okay. In other words, once again, we hit a dead end. We want to know, is there muksa for chatzi Shabbos? The Gemara has not arrived at a conclusion. I'm Rabbi Zera Tashma. The Gemara says, okay, let's try it this way. Mid pulin va'adashin da'ha pulin va'adashin mikara chazalakos. So now, when it comes to beans and other types of legumes, lentils, so you can eat it raw. Now, here, I don't know what the Gemara is talking about. Okay, when you go by lentils, right? Can anyone here want to imagine eating it? I don't know. Maybe I'm guessing that when it's immediately picked off the field, so it's somewhat more chewable. Who knows? Anyway, again, I'm going to operate with the Gemara's assumption is that it's chewable in its raw state. Now, what you're going to do is you're going to put it in a pot, and as it's cooking, meaning not when it's finished, but as it's cooking, it's now rendered inedible. And then as we turn to the top of Chavzayin Amar Aleph, and Gamar Bishulai Chazalahu. And then when the cooking is completed, so now it's going to be rendered edible. So here we go. So we are cooking beans going into Shabbos, otherwise it's chulent. So what happens now is that it goes from being edible in its raw state, then over the course of Shabbos it's rendered inedible, and then becomes edible again. And so the Gemara says, and so what do you see over here? Meaning we all eat the chulent, so it must be that at the point now where it's consumable, where it's edible on Shabbos, so despite the fact that at a moment of time of muksa, but obviously over here it is not muksa. So Amrle Abaye, Ulatamech Tichla Kederes Dama. So Abaye says, look, it sounds like a good question. Abaye says it's not a good question because based on that logic, why don't we just open up the floor? Anytime you're cooking something going into Shabbos, okay, the food should be all cooked before Shabbos. Okay, good. That's the halachic portion of today's daf. Good. So the food should be cooked before Shabbos. But as I'm sure you know, so there are circumstances, halachic ways in which the food doesn't have to be fully cooked before Shabbos. Okay, we're good. Okay. So when you have a pot of food going into Shabbos, so the Gemara wants to know, so if you have this idea of muksa lechatzi Shabbos, every food goes into this transition stage between being raw and being cooked. In that transition stage, it is simply inedible. And now, if in fact you are taking the position that there's muksa lechatzi Shabbos, every part of food that we're cooking going into Shabbos should be aser. And it's an untenable conclusion. So Abaye says, but there has to be an answer, meaning just simply to say we know it's not true, the Gemara says, what's the explanation? So, dahastam kederes dama benesh mashos rosh chosein. In other words, benesh mashos, the pot's boiling, and it's not edible at that point in time. So, l'orta achlina minayu, and then that night we go ahead and we eat it. So, ela gamru bide adam lo kami bailan. So, the Gemara says that if it's gamru bide adam, so that's not open for discussion. Meaning that in our discussion of muksa lechatzi Shabbos, we're not talking about gamru bide adam. Let's explain that even a little bit better. What does that mean, gamru bide adam? Rashi over here says, the key word within Rashi, biyado. It's within your control. Meaning that when you have a pot, you're totally within the control. Now, I understand on Shabbos, you're not in control. Meaning on Shabbos, you can't adjust the temperature and you can't adjust the fire. But still, the idea of where it is status-wise, it really is up to you. You could cook it earlier, you could cook it later. It's within your power. On the other hand, that's our discussion over here. Ki kami bailan, gamru bidei shamayim. We're talking about taking grapes and turning them into raisins. When are they going to be finished? It's not up to you. Meaning that it's totally up to when the sun finishes drying them. So that's considered to be Bidei Shamayim. That's a discussion that we're having. So to look at a pot of food going into Yontif or into Shabbos, so that doesn't speak to our question because that's considered Gamru Bidei Adam. Okay, good. Ad Khan. Okay, all right, that takes us to the end of the Gemara's tangent, started this morning and finished now. Is there muksa lechatzi Shabbos? The Gemara arrived at a lack of conclusion on this particular topic. We continue. Rav Yehuda Nisiya Havale Ha'u Bochra. So Rav Yehuda Nisiya had a Bechor. First, I'm going to ask, first of all, who was he? So he was the grandson of Rav Yehuda Nasi, right? Rav Yehuda Nasi had a grandson named after him. Just so that we're able to differentiate the Zeta from the Enikel. So the Zeta is Rav Yehuda Nasi, and the grandson is Rav Yehuda Nisi'a. Okay, good. Now, in terms of a Bechor, so what is he doing with a Bechor? Is he a Kohen? So the answer, of course, is no, he's not a Kohen. So what is he doing with a Bechor? So there's a really interesting Rashi over here. I'm going to read the Rashi inside. Havaleu Bechra, v'havalu bebeso kohanim simuchim al shulchano, so he had a lot of Kohanim sitting at his table, eating at his table. So the fact that he was supporting a lot of Kohanim, like supporting meaning like literally sitting and eating in his dining room at his table, so he accepted he was a recipient of a Bechor, and he gave it to the Kohen, he ate at his table. Now that obviously is a really interesting Rashi, because the Bechor is Mamon Kohen. And what Rashi is basically saying is that you can be serving as a executor of the Mamon Kohen. Okay, good. That's where Rashi says it really clearly. You have to say a pshat in the Gemara, meaning otherwise, what is he doing with the Bechor? But anyway, so Shajul Kamed Rab Ami, so Savad Lolamechse. So now he sent it to Rabbi Ami, and we're going to insert one important detail over here. Just from the context, we know it's true, but it's going to be clear, and that it was Yontif. And what he wanted to know is the Bechor Balmum? In other words, they had a blemish, but in order for a Kohen to be able to eat it, in other words, to shecht and to eat it, so you need a mumcha, you need an expert to render a decision. So he had to go to his local mumcha. So he went to Rabbi Ami and he asked him the question, Nu, is this a Balmum? So, and really, another question which underlies this is, it's Yontif. Do we render a psak like that on Yontif? So go back to what we learned in yesterday's daf or this morning's daf, and that is the machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Yehuda says that the Bechor can paskin, and Rabbi Shimon says the Bechor cannot paskin on Yontif. So really what this comes down to is, who do we follow? Do we follow like Rabbi Yehuda, or do we follow like Rabbi Shimon? So Rabbi Ami said, I'm really sorry, it's Yontif. I'm not looking at it today. I'm not rendering a psak today. So Amalei Rabbi Zrika, Vitem, Rabbi Yirmiya, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Alachik, Rabbi Yehuda. So what are you doing? Meaning that when we have a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, we follow like Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda says that the mumcha can go ahead, take a look at the Bechor. How are you posking like Rabbi Yehuda over that of Rabbi, I'm sorry, how are you posking like Rabbi Shimon over that of Rabbi Yehuda? So, okay. So this part, I mean, we can all relate to this part, but it's not right. So the so Rabbi Ami wouldn't give him a psak, so he went to a different rabbi. So okay, fine. And it's funny. He wasn't looking for a kula versus a chumra. Well, that's not totally true. I mean, he was looking for a kula in that he needed someone who would actually render a psak on Yontif. But over here, he just wanted a psak. And the first one wouldn't look at an anyantiv, so he went to a different rav. So he went to Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha. And he got the same basic answer. I'm not going to look at an anyantiv. So Amalei Rav Yirmiya, Vitim Rav Zrika, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Halachik, Rabbi Yehuda. And he says, and again, I don't understand. Doesn't the halacha fall like Rabbi Yehuda? And Rabbi Yehuda is a mekel. So you're allowed to paskin on this anyantiv. Like, what's going on? So Amalei Rabbi Abba, my time alo, Shav Kesin, Rabban Lamevidov, Dekar Rabbi Shimon. And so now the Gemara is basically wondering, yeah, what is going on? So why are they not passing like Rabbi Yehuda? Why are they passing like Rabbi Shimon? Why are they not passing like Rabbi Yehuda? So Amalei Vat Ma Biadecha. So he says, okay, well, do you have any tradition on this? So Amalei Hachi Am Rabbi Zera Halacha Ke Rabbi Shimon. He says, I do have a tradition, and my tradition is that the halacha in fact follows like Rabbi Shimon, and we're going to be machmir. So Amar Manda Have Eske VeAsik LaHasim VeAgmir LeShmaita Mepume. So he says, you heard Rabbi Zera say that? I cannot wait. In other words, I want to hear Rabbi Zera say it, hear it myself. Okay, so in other words, obviously, Eino Doma, it's not comparable hearing something secondhand versus hearing something firsthand. So I'm going to go to Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to go learn by Rabbi Zera, and I'm going to hear the Zera from Rabbi Zera. So Demara, I'm sorry, Mipuma Demara. Kisal Glasam Ashkechel Rabbi Zera. So now, so he goes to Eretz Yisrael, and he meets with Rabbi Zera, and this really excited him. Meaning, on the machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, are you allowed to look at a Bechor on Yontif? And so, again, he heard secondhand that Rabbi Zera passes like Rabbi Shimon, who's Machmer. And so now, he actually is right there in front of Rabbi Zera, an exciting moment in his life. Amalei Amramar, halachika Rabbi Shimon. So now he asks him, did you say the halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon? So Amalei Lom. He said, no, it's not what I said. Okay, and good. And lesson learned, by the way, in terms of secondhand information. Secondhand information is just that. It's secondhand information, right? It's not as good. So now,
don't shop around yourself.
Right, right. Another lesson learned. Now, Rabbi Zera said something, meaning, you know, there's some kernel of truth to what he heard in the name of Rabbi Zera. So Rabbi Zera clarifies. So what Rabbi Zera says is that, look, I'm not pasking like Rabbi Shimon, but if you want my opinion, meaning I'm inclined to say that Rabbi Shimon seems to be more correct. That's all I'm saying. But I'm not paskin like Rabbi Shimon. Why am I inclined to say that Rabbi Shimon's more correct? So I'm Rima Diktani Mimasitsin, because let's take a look together at a Mishnah. And that is Rabbi Shimon Omer Kol Shein Mumo Nikar Mibo Yom Ein Zeh Min Amuchan. So now, if you go to our Mishnah, so in other words, the Shita Rabbi Shimon and the Mishnah. Okay, right, we've gone over it this morning. Good. So now, what tips me off that the halacha should fall like Rabbi Shimon? It's the following. The Kitan Labe Brisa, because when you look at the Brisa, what are you going to see in the Brisa? Belashon Chachamim. Meaning, go back to the Brisa that we did yesterday's daf, Again, I'm so confused. Go back to the brisa that we did this morning, I'm meaning on Chavav, and you'll see that Rabbi Shimon's position in the brisa is recorded as the Chachamim. Ah. Now, it's still Rabbi Shimon, but when the brisa is recording as the Chachamim, you know that what that is? That's called the tell. Meaning that's the brisa's way of telling us that the majority position is notas inclined to go like Rabbi Shimon. And that's why Rabbi Shimon in the Brice is expressed as a Chachamim. Very good. So Shema Minam Mistabar Kavasei. That's why I'm inclined to think the Halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon. But Rabbi Zera says, to be honest, I don't have a tradition. I'm not pasking like Rabbi Shimon. I'm just simply saying that I'm more inclined to go in that direction. My Havi Allah. So the Gemara says, okay. So we now, can we move on to the next stage of the halachic development? So we now know Machlok is between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. We now know where Rabbi Zera is inclined to go. But the Gemara says, "Lamaisa, what are we going to do?" So I'm Rav Yosef Tashma, the Talia Baashle Ravave. So the Gemara says, "Look, what we're going to do is that we're going to be Tola. We're going to tie this machlokus to another machlokus." The Gemara calls it thick ropes because the other Tanaim are greats, and so we'll tie this one to another machlokus Tanaim, and then we'll see where we go from there. So obviously we have to first introduce ourselves. What's the other machlokus Tanaim? De Amar, Rebbe, Shimon, Ben Pazi, Amar, Rebbe, Shimon, Ben Levi, Amar, Rebbe, Yossi, Ben Shaul, Amar, Rebbe, Mishum, Kala, Kedisha, Dibishlaim, Rebbe, Shimon, Vechavirav, Amru, Halacha, Kerebi, Meir. So Rebbe Shimon and his colleagues says that the Halacha falls like Rebbe Meir. Now, again, just to avoid confusion over here, because it can be confusing, so we say the Rashbi over here, sorry, when we say Rebbe Shimon over here, we don't mean the Rashbi. Meaning the Rashbi over here is contemporary with Rabbi Meir, right? May even be a smidge older than Rabbi Meir. So over here, when we say Rabbi Shimon, we'll go back to yesterday's daf, this morning's daf, and Rabbi Shimon over here probably means Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, and not the Rashbi. Anyway, the point is that the halacha falls like Rabbi Meir. So Amru v'ha inu kashisha mine tuva. Now he quotes it in the name of Kala Kedisha. Kala Kedisha is older than Rabbi Shimon. So what does it mean? Older than Reb Meir. What do you mean quoting Reb Meir? Ela b'shitas Reb Meir amura. So the Gemara says fine. In other words, they're holding within the shita Reb Meir. Okay. Anyway, did none. Now, of course, all this brings us to a simple question: who's Reb Meir? What is Reb Meir saying over here? We haven't heard Reb Meir yet. Right. Where did he come from? Right now, he came from left field. So the Gemara says, okay. So let's introduce ourselves to the. To Reb Meir. Did not we learned in the Mishnah. This is the Mishnah Bechoros. HaShochet is the Bechor V'acher Kacher es Mumo. So you know what you're supposed to do. First you're supposed to ask questions and then you're supposed to shoot. Right? Everybody knows this. And so what happens now with the Bechor that was a blemished animal, but you shechted it and then you went to your Mumcha and you said, look, I know I went out of order, but can you help me out over here? In other words, it's a Mum is a physical blemish. It's not going to change post-mortem, so can you go and take a look at the animal, and can you render a decision? I should have shechted it first. I know that. Sorry. I should have asked questions first. I know that, but I didn't. So what happens now if you shechted it first? Can you still ask a question? So here's a machlokas. So Rav Yehuda Matir, Rav Mimeir, Omer Hov, and Nishcha Shalom, Api Mumcha, Asar. So Rav Yehuda is a mekel, and Rav Mimeir says, no, you can't go ahead and you can't ask a Mumcha after you shechted it. Now, here's the question, right? The million-dollar question. Why? Why for Reb Meir can you not ask a mumcha after you shechted it? So, amakas of Reb Meir, Rias Bechor, Lavka, Rias Trefa, Rias Bechor, Mechaim, Rias Trefa, Lachar Shechita. Okay. So, the Gemara says, and I'll tell you why. Now, it happens to be that the reason we're about to provide right now, the Gemara is going to change its mind. But, that's a little foreshadow. But right now, here's what the Gemara is thinking. Now, let's say, for example, the decision about a trefa, right? So obviously, all trefas are going to be discovered post-shechita, obviously. In other words, we're talking about organs. The only way we can even harvest the organs is after you shechted the animal. We can't take a look at the lungs until first you shech the animal, and then you cut the animal up, and then you remove the lungs. Actually, just by the way, I just mentioned this recently. So I was there at a shechita and I was excited. I did a bedika. I did a bedikas reya. I did a checking of the lungs. And you do it twice. You do it while it's still within the cavity of the chest of the animal. And then you do it again after you remove it from the animal. So there's a bedikas panim and there's a bedikas chutz. Okay, good. You should be proud of me, by the way. I stuck my hand right in there. Yes. Huh? I'm not qualified. to have. I'm not qualified to render an opinion. Anyway, so the so good. So the so a treifa, you're obviously checking after your shechita, but Reb Meir says, but not by a mum, to establish whether a bechor is a baal mum or not, you can't do it after shechita. So here's what the Gemara is thinking. They're different. Why are they different? Because treifa, I'll use my language, but it's basically the point of the Gemara. Because when it comes to treifa is just simply a pathology. It's a diagnosis. In other words, was there a hole in the lung? Yes or no. That could be decided before or after shechita. And again, before shechita, nowadays we do have the imaging, but they didn't have the imaging back then, so there's no other way to do it other than after shechita. But it's not a psak based in, it's just simply a diagnosis that we are just simply able to do after the animal shechted. But when it comes to baal mum, that's a psak based in. Since it's a psak based in can only be rendered only while the animal is alive. A psak based in cannot be rendered after the animal is dead. That right now is the Gemara's thought process behind the sheet of Reb Meir. And now what? Now, if this thought process is correct, so here's what the Gemara is saying, is that if, according to Reb Meir, we're looking at a psak based in, meaning that the decision about whether an animal is in fact a baal mum is not so much a diagnosis, but more of a psak based in. So now let's follow up with the next question. Can I do that on Yontif? So if the correct understanding of Reb Meir is that it's a psak based in, so then you can't do that on Yontif. Meaning, whose side are you going to be on? Are you going to be on Rebbe Yehuda? Are you going to be on Rebbe Shimon? You're going to now follow the sheet of Rebbe Shimon. So since we know the halachas like Reb Meir, that you can't paskin a baal mum after the animal has been shechted, so that tells us that it's a psak din. Since we now know it's a psak din, so then on our machlokas of Rebbe Shimon and Rebbe Yehuda, we now know that the halacha falls like Rebbe Shimon. Okay, that part was a little bit complicated, but if you follow well, that's the thinking of the Gemara. So umina, and the Gemara is just going to simply conclude on this very point. Rias treifa afilu biyantav rias bechor meir of yantav. Okay, so the Gemara says, and therefore what we can now do is that we can extrapolate. So Amalei Abaye. So Abaye says, well, it was a nice idea. It was a really nice thought, but simply stated, you're wrong. You're wrong about your understanding of Reb Meir. Reb Meir says that you cannot render a psak regarding the Bechor Baal Mum after we're shechted. Has nothing to do with whether it's a psak or whether it's not. That's not the issue. The issue is kanas. In other words, you did wrong. You did bad. You were supposed to go to the mumcha prior to the shechita. You didn't go to the mumcha prior to the shechita. And so now, because you didn't do it correctly, the rabbis imposed a kanas. That's the only reason behind Reb Meir. And now I'll just read that inside. So atu hasam b'ra'am mumim pligi b'kanas pligi. They're arguing about kanas. The amar Rav bar Barachana amar Rebbe Yochanan b'dukin shabayin kol amal lo pligi da'aser mishum de mishtanin. So in terms of dukin shabayin, right, what you and I would call a cataract, I'm not saying we're right about that, but in other words, when it comes to a cataract, so that actually goes through a physical change with the death of an animal. And so therefore, there's no way of telling. So ki pligi b'mum mishabigo, if we're talking about any other physical blemish within the body, Reb Meir Savar Gazrinan, Mumim Shibaguf Atu Mumim Shibayan, Reb Yehuda Savar Lo Gazrinan. And over here, it's just a question of whether or not Xerah is to be made. And according to Rebbe Meir, there's Xerah, meaning since by the eye, the cataract of the eye, so it actually goes through a transformation of physical change before and after Shechita, so therefore you cannot properly assess as to whether or not the animal was a Baal Mum after Shechita in terms of the cataract of the eye. So Reb Meir says, we're going to be gozer the rest of the animal as well. You, even though there's no physical change by any blemish of any other part of the animal, nevertheless, a gzera. And Reb Yehuda says, no gzera. So, but it has nothing to do with a psak based in. And so therefore, your analysis of the machlokes between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda is quite frankly wrong. And so therefore, we're no longer able to connect Reb Meir and Reb Shimon. Okay. I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak Masis Nami Deka. In fact, when you read the Mishnah, you will see that our current understanding of Reb Meir is absolutely correct. Diktani, Reb Meir Omer Hov Nishcha Shalapi Mumcha. Asr. It's really a simple reading. Meaning, just read the words of the Mishnah. Why will Reb Meir not allow you to take the animal to Mumcha after you shechted it? Because you shechted it without having a Mumcha there. Meaning, you should have had the Mumcha there first. You should have asked the Mumcha first. That's the reason why the rabbis banned you from asking a mumcha afterwards.
Gzeira, it's a kenas,
It's a great point. The Gemara shuttled back and forth between the word gzer and the word knas. All right, but you're right. I was sensitive to the same thing as well. Shmamina knasuhu dekakanish shmamina. So the Gemara says it's a knas, and it has nothing to do whether it's a psak based in or it's not a psak based in. Okay, so when all said and done, so the Gemara opened up with my havilah. What's the conclusion? And then this happens in the Gemara. And then what happens is that the Gemara goes into another round of, I think I know the answer. And the Gemara is like, I'm not so sure I know the answer anymore. So, yeah.
Usually in the past, when there's like you're looking at the time and what they express is not followed the regular pattern, right? Like we know like Rav Shimon is like more makeup than the regular.
Yeah.
So we say April, right? April.
Sometimes. First of all, the Gemara hates a strong word. The Gemara does not like using the word epoch. And if Rav Yochanan is definitely more comfortable with that kind of approach, but generally speaking, the Gemara does not like to just simply flip around a Mishnah or a Braisa. Okay. Ami Vardina Chazi Burcher de Benisa Hava Biyumatava Lo Hava Chaze. So this Ami Vardina. So it came across a Bechor of the house of the Nasi, Anyantiv, and he wouldn't take a look at it. Yeah, good, very good. I'm glad you didn't look at Anyantiv. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Ami looked, paskin on a Bechor. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Ami, ki chazi me esmo, chazi. So the Gemara says, with the Gemara's answer, it's all going to be consistent. So the Gemara says, yeah, that Rabbi Ami, the truth of the matter is, would not look at a Bechor on Yantiv. And the Gemara says, why do you think Rabbi Ami looked at a Bechor on Yantiv? So the Gemara says, of Yantiv, Shiula Kamishael, Hecha Hava Uvda. So the Gemara says, here's what happened. What happened was that it was Erev Yantiv, and your Rabbanim on Erev Yantiv, they're really busy. There's a lot going on in Erev Yantiv, both for the community and the family. There's just a lot going on. So here, what happened was is that somebody brought Rabbi Ami a Bechor before Yantiv. He says, look, I have no time right now. He says, I'm going to look at it now, and then, and then come back to me on Yantiv because I just have a couple follow-up questions. But the truth of the matter is that my diagnosis is really, and my psak is really occurring before Yantiv. I just need to ask some follow-up questions on Yantiv itself. I don't have the time right now to have a discussion, but in other words, but the psak was really rendered before Yantiv. Now, what follow-up questions are we talking about? I'm glad you asked. We are now on the Amud Beis. Over Yamtiv Shula Kamasha, Hecha Hava Uvda, Ki Ha Dahu Gavra De Aisei Burcho Lekame De Rava, Apain De Mala Yumatava. So the Gemara tells another story where someone goes to Rava with a Bechor and Erev Yamtiv, and Hava Yasev Rava Vekachayif Reishe, and Rava was in the middle of a shampoo, which is just great imagery. And meanwhile, Daliena Vechazi Lamome. And so Rava says, look, I'm right now, like, I don't have all the time in the world. Here, just do me a favor. Show me the animal. Let me take a look at it. Good. And he did. And Rava said, okay, no, come back tomorrow because I have some more questions for you. I just don't have time right now. So basically he tells him, here's the story. The story is that my animal was on one side of the fence. And he saw some barley on the other side of the fence, and he tried to stretch his neck over, and what happened was is that he split his lip on the fence. So in other words, I had nothing to do with the mum. This mum happened on its own. It happened naturally. And that's basically where all the follow-up questions are going, meaning how did the mum occur? Because again, as we're about to establish, you can't put a mum on the animal. Huh? No, he was just poskening on it. That's all. So amalei dama atka ramtalei. So now, but more follow-up questions, meaning, okay, I hear you. Did you encourage the animal to go ahead and to stretch its neck across the fence? Maybe you held the food on the other side? Okay, so, right? So I'm going to lay low. He says no. So over here, here's what we're learning together. We're learning together that, generally speaking, grama is, now to use the word mutter is a strong word. I don't want to use the word mutter. I'm not. But grama, generally speaking, is putter. That's not true by Nezek. Okay. I take it back. It is true by Nezek. Right, I'm sorry. Grama ben Izakin is Pater. That's the sixth parak of Baba Kama. Okay. So anyway, grama, generally speaking, meaning if you don't actively do something, but it happens even with your involvement, but more passively. So that's called grama. When it comes to Bechor and Baal Mom, grama is still Aser Min HaTorah. How do I know that? The time we have a brisa, mum lo yebo, ain li ela shalo yebo mum, minain shalo yigram lo yide davar acher shalo yevi batseko devela vi enichlo, al gavi hausen kadeshi avi akela vi itlenu. So here's what you're now allowed to do. Put some sort of honey on the ear of your bechor. And now it's right, it's very tempting. A dog's going to come over, take a bite out of the ear of your bechor, and lo and behold, it's a blemished animal. That's fantastic. Now you're going to bring it to the mumcha. You can't do that. Meaning, now that's not biyadayim. You didn't actively put a mum on the animal, so it was grama. It's still going to be asar. I don't know that. Tamalamar, kol mum. Amar mum, v'amar kol mum. So it's a rebuy. We learn that from the word kol. So now that you can't do it actively, you can't even do it al yaday grama. Okay, and now, the point over here is as follows. So in two times over, now we're hearing stories about the Rabbanim looking at a mum on Yantiv. The Gemara says that's not the correct story. That's not the accurate version of the story. The accurate version of the story both times is they looked at the animal before Yantiv. And really, their psak came before Yantiv. It just happens to know, they need to know as to whether or not the mum came about naturally or came through some sort of activity, both active or passive, on the part of the owner. And that's why he needs follow-up questions. Those follow-up questions can occur on Yontif. In fact, they did occur on Yontif because the rabbi just happened to have been really pressed for time on Erev Yontif. But those follow-up questions are not the psak. Those follow-up questions are just to make sure that he's about to issue a correct psak. Good. Adkan. So it certainly sounds from the Gemara's conclusion that you can't look at a bamum on Yontif. Meaning it sounds like from the Gemara the halacha goes like Rabbi Shimon. Okay, let's continue. Well, let's finish up to the next Mishnah. So an animal that dies on Yantiv. So now it's muksa, can't move it. Umaisa v'shalav es Rabbi Tarfon. Allah v'al hachal shenit meis v'nichnas lebeis amezus v'shalav amr lo yizizem imkama. And that together with the question of chala over here meaning. Chala that were mafresh, meaning the technical chala, not what we call chala. We confuse each other because the bread on Friday night we call chala. You know, all bread on Shabbos we call chala. Okay, Minag Yisrael. Okay, I'm sure there's a good explanation in terms of why. I happen not to have one, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, when the Mishnah is talking about chala, it's talking about the portion that's taken off and given to the Kohanim. So chala became tameh. If the chala becomes tameh, so it's muksa. So if the animal dies or if the chala becomes tameh, it's muksa. Lo yizizamim kamam. You can't move him. Now the Gemara immediately jumps on the Mishnah. Lema, before we get to the Mishnah, I do want to highlight one point over here, and that is why this is Rashi's point. If your challah becomes tamei anyantiv, I got this great idea. Says Rashi, why don't you burn it? Okay. Everyone here knows that the challah becomes tamei, truma day becomes tamei, so you can burn. Now, I know dough is not that flammable, and it's not. But in other words, in principle, in theory, why not burn it on yantiv? So look, if you're using it for, let's say, illumination,
to heat something else up,
or even for illumination. In other words, we say mitoch. Mitoch shor shor letzarech shor nam shor letzarech. So why not light it on fire? So really interesting Rashi over here. I'm going to read the Rashi. Not the whole Rashi. Just the back half of the Rashi. Rashi on the Mishnah. V'lo tema dafka tzrefa mishim davar shalot tzarechi. Da'im alikim mishim tzrefa b'yamtav avar lo tzarechi. Da'ad lakas ner b'yamtav tzarech achila hi umu teres. Okay? So in other words, it can be tzarech achila. Afilo hachi b'shem tzrefa lo. V'hu shem truma shenitmes. Because challah that becomes tameh is no different than truma that becomes tameya. And Rashi writes, "Gzeres akasav hi shein kachim tamei mitbarim biyantav." What you're not allowed to do is that you're not allowed to burn kachim on yantav. Derachmana achshavei lavarasan dechsev ba'ish yisareif. And we know that kachim cannot be burnt on yantav. It's a series of drushes that brings us to that point. Nosar. If you have, let's say, for example, nosar on yantav. So nosar cannot be burnt on yantav. So over here. So even though, what are we talking about? We're talking about challah. Now challah does have kedusha, but it's interesting. Rashi says that if in fact you burn it, that's considered like you're burning kachim on yantiv. Derachmana achshavei lahavir asam dechsev ba'ish yisareif hilkach malachi. And therefore what it turns now into is a malacha. Since you're burning it, even though you're getting hana from it, But since you're burning it as a function of, it is Truma Tameya, so therefore that is tantamount to burning Kachem Anyantiv, which you're not allowed to do, since you're not allowed to do it, it therefore turns into a malacha. Okay. Lema Tanan Stama Delo Kerebi Shimon. Okay, now we're back in the world of Muksa. Okay, so the whole Bechor discussion, which we just had now for two consecutive Dapim, so now, right, new topic. We're back to Muksa. And what do we know about Muksa? Rabbi Shimon's a Mekel. Rabbi Yehuda's a Machmir. Right? Throughout all of Beitza and a good part of Masechta Shabbos, we get to hear that time and again. And so now the Gemara says, our Mishnah that says that when the animal becomes a Nevel on Yantiv, so you're not allowed to move it, so our Mishnah's not going like Rabbi Shimon. Seems right, right? So that's the Gemara's point. So Rabbi Shimon, Omer Mechazchen, Esadun, Lefnei Behem, Aves, and Nevel, Lefnei Aklavim. So, and Rabbi Shimon's of the position that one is allowed to cut up a nevela in front of the dogs, meaning even if the animal becomes a nevela on Shabbos, on Yantiv, so you're going to go ahead and you can cut it up because it's not muksa. Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold the muksa. And Rabbi Yehuda, Amrim lo is a nevela mer of Shabbos Asura, and Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that the animal did not die before Shabbos, so then of course it's muksa, meaning if it died on Shabbos, it's muksa. Good, this is a classic machlokus between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda in terms of the scope of muksa. So the Gemara says, Afilo tem Rabbi Shimon. No, you can even say that our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Shimon. Now, the Gemara is motivated to say that, because if you think about it, what's our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah. So to say that our Mishnah, it's a Stam Mishnah here tucked away in Beitza, is not going like Rabbi Shimon, the Gemara is uncomfortable with that. So that's why we can argue that our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Shimon. So Moda Rabbi Shimon, Babalechaim Shemesu Shasurin. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Shimon is of the position that when you have a live animal and it dies, so even Rabbi Shimon would be moda that that's muksa. And again, we said this before, but let's say this again. When we say that Rabbi Shimon lays le muksa, it does not mean he doesn't hold a muksa. It means that he has a much more narrow and limited scope of muksa.
What category?
We'll get to that in just a moment. So he has a much more limited scope of muksa. So as a result of that, so there are going to be some cases of muksa that he subscribes to. Now, what is a classic example of the kind of muksa that he subscribes to? So it happens to be that we talked about it just earlier today. Gerogerus utsmukim, meaning that when I take something and actively push it away, in other words, I write it off, so that for Rabbi Shimon is considered muksa. Even according to Rabbi Shimon. So what the Gemara now is trying to suggest is that this is going to fall under that category. So the Gemara says, now really? This is going to fall under that category? So the Gemara says, you know, not everyone agrees to that. Meaning, the Amoraim debate this very issue about whether or not a live animal going into Shabbos would be muksa for Rabbi Shimon. So one Amora says it is. But El Amar Bere de Rav Yosef Mishmei de Rav Adamar Chalokai Rabbi Shimon Afilu Bebal Echaim Shemesu Shemutarim Ma'ikal Ameimar. And it happens to be that another Amor is of the opinion that a live animal going into Shabbos for Rabbi Shimon, if and when it dies on Shabbos, is not going to be Muksa. So according to that Amora, so our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, Tikr Maziri Bebehemus Kachim. So the Gemara says, well, maybe over here we're talking about where the animal in our Mishnah is the Behemus Kachim. Now, that is a little bit of a stretch, but the Gemara says it's only a little bit of a stretch. Actually, it reads pretty well in our Mishnah. Deka nami diktani alav alachal shenit meis. Ma'achala dikedisha, abehema dikedisha. Because look at the two items that are mentioned in our Mishnah. An animal and chala. Now, that's two funny things to put together. So now the Gemara is saying a really good pshat, which is that, of course, chala has kedusha that we know. Chala is truma. It has kedusha. So the behema in question in our Mishnah is also an animal that was a carbon. It was hektish. Now, if it was hektish and it died, so now you understand why it's muksa. It's muksa because you can't give it to your dog, meaning you can't give kachim. You can't give kachim to your dog. And on top of that, also as another general rule, you can't redeem it on Shabbos. And as another rule, you can't redeem kachim so that your animals can eat it. Okay, so for many reasons that your animal can't eat it, and therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's muksa. Okay, Ella, time of dikdisha, ha de chulin sharya. So that would mean then that if it's chulin, there would be mutter. So hanich lamar berei de Rav Yosef Mishmei de Rav Adamar chalakai Rabbi Shimon apa balechaim shemesu shemutarim shapir. So now we're going to go back to that machlokas amarayim. So if you're the amaru who says that for Rabbi Shimon, a chulin animal that dies on Shabbos is not muksa, great. But Elamar Baramemar Mishmei Rav Adamar Modei Rabbi Shimon Babalechaim Shemesu Shasurim Ma'ikalamemar. But if you're the other Amora who says that according to Rabbi Shimon, a live animal that dies on Shabbos is in fact muksa, so now, how are you going to learn our Mishnah? What's our Mishnah talking about? So, hacha b'mayiskin b'misukenes v'divrei hakol. Oh, so you could say that our Mishnah is talking about a misukenes.
Why is that our Mishnah not like Rabbi Shimon or like Rabbi Yehuda? It's like Rabbi Yehuda, isn't it?
No, 100%. That goes without saying. The Mishnah going like Rabbi Yehuda, clear. What the Gemara wants to do is try to squeeze Rabbi Shimon into our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah, and it would be uncomfortable. It'd be awkward for our Mishnah not to be going like Rabbi Shimon. Okay? Meaning, when the day is over, if our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Shimon, it's fine. But what the Gemara is trying to shoehorn him in to our Mishnah. Well, let me just finish the Gemara's point. So the Gemara's point is that really the Mishnah is talking about not Kachem, it's talking about Chulin, and it's talking about Mesukenes. Now, now if it's talking about Mesukenes, how's that better? How does that help us? Because we know about the Mesukenes, so that means to say that going into Shabbos, so you expected it to die. Meaning, the whole nature of Mesukenes is basically, you see that the animal's on its last limb. And so under those circumstances, Rabbi Shimon would say, under those circumstances, the animal is not muksa. Because again, what's the whole idea of muksa? I'm writing it off. Meaning, if I have a live, healthy animal going into Shabbos, so I know that on Shabbos, I can't do anything with the animal. And I'm not expecting it to die. So therefore, that animal's muksa, even according to Rabbi Shimon. But once we're talking about a mesukenes, so now the mesukenes animal, which I'm expecting to die, so now I'm not writing it off. And now I'm on Shabbos. If it happens to die, I put that into my mind going into Shabbos. It's therefore not muksa, and therefore I can feed it to the dogs. And that would be, I'm sorry, and that would be not our Mishnah over here, but that would be the Mishnah that would be the Mishnah in Shabbos, as opposed to the Mishnah over here, where it's talking about a healthy animal. Okay, yeah.
When you're mentioning
it, I guess, Stam Mishnah,
why wouldn't
that be our Meir? Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, but on the issue of muksa, so we know who our participants are in the Machlokas. It's either going to be Rabbi Shimon or Rabbi Yehuda. So,
but half an hour ago we actually brought up Rabbi Meir and said that he is against it also.
No, but again, Rabbi Meir, that was regarding the Bechor. That's a different issue. The issue of the Bechor is a different issue. Over here, this is the issue of Muksa. So the issue of Muksa, the principal participants of the debate is Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. So again, our Mishnah clearly going like Rabbi Yehuda. It's just a question of whether it's also going like Rabbi Shimon. Okay, good. We'll stop over here. We have just a little bit more, but it happens to be topic wise. This Mishnah really introduces a totally new topic. It's really a good stopping point. And also, I want to stop anyway. Let's quickly recap. Okay, muksa for half Shabbos, yes or no? That was the first topic of today. And again, if it was muksa during Ben Hashemash, there's nothing to talk about. It will be muksa for the balance of Shabbos and the balance of Yontif. The question on the table is: it was chazay going into Shabbos, and then over the course of Shabbos, it became no longer fit, and then it became fit again. So do we say that because it had an interim period on Shabbos of Muksa, is that now Muksa's status going to continue for the balance of Shabbos? Yes or no? The Gemara left it off inconclusive. And that took us through a good part of Chazayin Amud Aleph. Then we went back to the discussion of whether or not a Chacham can look at a Bechor on Yontif. Meaning, on the Machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, where Rabbi Yehuda is a Mekel, and Rabbi Shimon is a Machmir. So who do we follow like? So that occupied most of today's daf that went through all the way through Chav Zayin Amud Beis, where the Gemara discussed, the Gemara says, okay, can we stop discussing? Then the Gemara discussed some more. Then the Gemara told stories about Amoraim. But when all said and done, it certainly seems like from the Gemara's conclusion that the Amoraim were more prone to go like Rabbi Shimon, not like Rabbi Yehuda, not paskening on a Bechor on Yontif. And our last topic today was going to be that if an animal dies on Shabbos or on Yontif, or if the challah becomes tmeya on Yontif, so it's muksa. Lo yizi zemen kamam, you're not allowed to move it because it's muksa. And the Gemara's discussion was, is it possible to shoehorn Rabbi Shimon into our Mishnah? Because we know that Rabbi Shimon says that if an animal dies on Shabbos, you're allowed to cut it up and you're allowed to give it to your dog. So it seems like our Mishnah's not going like Rabbi Shimon, and the Gemara efforts and really tries to make our Mishnah at least somehow fit into the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, and the Gemara successfully does so.